or title search required. Remodel your kitchen, replace your roof, or add a room. You decide. Looking to do a larger project? We have home equity loans with new lower rates or a line of credit that allows the flexibility of check writing. Give us a call, stop in, or visit us at granitehills.org to find out how you can make your remodeling dreams come true.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. A little chilly out there today, isn't it? Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. Rapidly warming up as we speak. Only 12 below. Coming up on the program this morning, a pretty icy reception to John Gruber, the healthcare consultant by the state's auditor. Doug Hoffer will join us on the phone coming up at about 9:40 this morning. He has referred a case to the Attorney General's office suggesting that the healthcare consultant may have overbilled or at least incorrectly billed the state of Vermont. So we'll check in with him coming up in about 35 minutes. We'll take your phone calls throughout the program as well. You can reach us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Coming up in our second hour, I'm sure we'll delve into this, what seems like one of the most ridiculous controversies out there, this funding of Homeland Security. My God. I mean, you know, I just think this is the kind of thing that all of you, and myself included, look at Washington, D.C. and say, dysfunctional. I mean, it really is just amazing. Also coming up in our second hour this morning, I'll feature another interview that I had in a windswept area with another one of the participants over the weekend in Newport who took part in the Winter Swimming Championships in Lake Memphremagog. Yeah, that's actually true. So I'll feature that coming up in our second hour. And again, our phone numbers, you can reach us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. We begin this morning, and welcome back to the program, local author Ben Hewitt. He's the author, along with his lovely bride, Penny, of The Nourishing Homestead, One Back to the Land Family's Plan for Cultivating Soil, Skills, and Spirit. And Ben has, of course, joined us previously on the program. A couple of his books, the first one that he wrote, The Town That Food Saved, about Hardwick in that area there. And he also wrote a book, too, about schooling his two kids at home called Homegrown. And he's kind enough to join us live on the line. Ben, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm cold, Mark. How are you?
You got all the chores done this morning?
Chores are done in record time. Yeah, when it's 20 below, we do not dally.
You know, it is amazing how quickly you can move in this kind of weather, isn't it?
You know, I have to say, I mean, today, it's wicked cold. There's no question about it. But there was no wind today. It's been super, super windy out here. So, you know, 5 below and windy is much, much colder than 20 below and still. So in a way, I'm kind of actually surprised at how peaceful it felt when I went outdoors.
You know, I have to tell you, I just love this book. You can learn everything in this book, including how to build a house. You can figure out how you can...
That's an exaggeration. That's a gross...
Oh, come
no
on.
Nobody should buy this book expecting it to teach them how to build a house.
Oh, come on. Well,
you're a respectable journalist, Mark. Please, don't spread disinformation.
You can learn at least from your mistakes, right?
Right, yes. Yeah, they can learn how not to build a house. That's right. Yeah.
Okay, all right. How to not build a house. You can also figure out how to safely figure out if an electric fence is hot. And you can also figure out how to make sausages. I don't know a lot of books that can contain all that.
You forgot about the roadkill, determining the edibility of roadkill. Did you not get to that part
well,
yet?
The, you mean the woodchuck chili recipe?
Well, no. I'm talking about the animals falling flat on the side of the highway.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you'll have to tell us a test on that. I also want to find out about this woodchuck chili, which sounds really yummy. But here's where I want to start with this morning, Ben, because I have to say this book is very, not only is it, there's some instruction in it, but it's very inspiring and it's very appealing. I mean, I was ready to, you know, chuck my job this morning and try to go find a piece of land. Let me just read one section here, which really captured my attention, where you talk about what you're really doing out there in Cabot. You said, to us, talking about your family. Making a life means living in a way that it feels connected. Connected to the land, to animals both wild and domestic, to community, to seasons and celebrations, and to the food we eat. It means living in a way that affords us the time to follow our passions and to feel as if the work we do nurtures our bodies, minds, and spirits rather than depleting them. It means waking up every morning looking forward to what the day will bring and going to bed every night satisfied with what was delivered. It means living in a way that enables us to act from a place of kindness and generosity, in part because we have seen that when we act from a place of kindness and generosity, these things are returned to us tenfold, and in part because kindness and generosity feel a heck of a lot better than meanness and stinginess.
I must have been in a really good mood when I wrote that.
You know, do you even recognize that writing? That's really good stuff.
Yeah, right?
What were you trying to, what's the point you're trying to make in that?
Oh, you know, I think the point I'm trying to make is I think I'm really in a lot of ways just trying to sort of express my gratitude for being able to live the way we do, which is something I really I think we all get sort of jaded accustomed to whatever our circumstances are, and I really try not to lose sight of how fortunate we are to have been able to follow this path. So I think, in a way, that's a little bit of a message to myself, not to forget that we have been really fortunate, and in a lot of ways, it does just sort of boil down to like good luck. We've had a lot of really, really sort of lucky breaks over the years that have enabled us to sort of carve out this life. And I don't ever want to try to forget, I want to try to never forget that.
Is it as idyllic as you make it sound, and romantic?
Well, no, I mean, of course not. I mean, of course there are days when, like a morning like today, and you wake up and, your first thought is, oh man, it's 20 below and I got to go outside and do chores. But here's the thing. It's like, ultimately, I am so grateful for sort of being compelled to go, just to take this morning as a very specific example because it's so fresh in all of our memories.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really glad that I have to go outside and do chores on a day like this, and that I have the opportunity to visit with my animals and have that experience. I never come, no matter how much I might feel like I don't want to go do chores or don't want to sort of tackle some task that needs doing around here, by the time I'm done with it, I'm never sorry for having had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel better when I come indoors from having done something. It's even something really, really hard. And I do think, I think there's a lot of reasons that we've chosen this path, and one of those reasons, though, is that I think it seems really clear to me that a life of sort of the life that we're sort of pitched through the media and through the pervasive marketing that's just sort of like surrounding us and bombarding us all the time, that we should be striving for ever more convenience, is not really all that fulfilling ultimately. And so a life that's full of small inconveniences is to me, one of the quickest paths to a meaningful life.
Mm-hmm. How self-sustaining are you out there in Cabot?
Not very. And I guess I say that because I'm really sort of quick to quash people's expectations of sort of the self-sufficient life, which I don't actually see. To me, it seems like, I think a lot of people aspire to this notion of like self-sufficiency, and to me that seems a little bit, almost a little bit sad, I believe, and I feel really strongly that it's not really self-sufficiency we're after, and it's not even like independence, it's more interdependence, but it's interdependence within the context of a community, and I think we have this notion that maybe is somewhat particular to being American, that we should all sort of be independent and not be needing one another. But of course, when we choose independence from our friends and neighbors and family, we invariably just, it's not really independence. We're transferring our dependence on them to dependence on industry and corporation, because none of us can go it alone. And I think, you know, needing others and being needed by others is a really, really enriching way to live.
How do you talk about, what's the relationship, how do you interact with your immediate community and how do you, I don't know, interact with the rest of the outside world being basically on the farm?
Well, immediate community is, you know, we happen to be, in my view, fortunate enough to live in, a working class, a very blue-collar community. We do chores with a neighbor, a dairy farmer, just down the road over the hill from us on a regular basis. We hay with other neighbors. We have obviously, friends in our community and relations just outside our immediate community. So those are all people that we interact with on a regular basis. This sort of smaller sphere of our sort of analog lives. I certainly interact with a lot of people via my written work, both in print and then also on my blog. So that's one way that we sort of connect beyond our immediate community and even beyond the borders of the United States.
Mm-hmm. What about your kids? Talk about your kids.
In relation to our homestead or in relation to our community?
Both.
Or both.
Yeah.
In relation to our community, the kids also actually, they do chores three nights a week at this farm just over the hill. Usually they are able to, they put on their skis at this time of year and actually ski down and do chores and then ski home. And in terms of, sort of more of their peer group, and of course you're familiar with our educational style, which does not involve formalized school experience. We have a group that meets here on a weekly basis, and so they get a lot of peer interaction in that group. And then we also place a really, and we talked about this, I think, when I was in talking about my previous book, we place a really strong emphasis on their relationships with people who are not necessarily in their age groups in our community.
Right, right. Adults.
Adults.
Yeah.
Elders. And even younger than them. I think that's one of the real benefits of this path that we have chosen, is that it does give them opportunities to engage with people outside their immediate peer group.
Well, talk about that, though, and I guess a little bit more in relation to your two kids. So what's the experience you think they've been able to have that other kids haven't?
And so are we going down the educational path here, or are we talking about the homestead?
No, we're talking about...
It's really hard to separate all this stuff. I guess that's one of the points of the book, is that this stuff all sort of forms this little sort of ecosystem, right, that encompasses sort of life, living, and by living, I mean, income generating type of living, and education. I mean, these are all sort of these things... We don't really segregate any of those in our lives. They're all sort of happening almost all the time,
right.
I guess, for better or worse. Sometimes it feels like for better. Every once in a while it feels like for worse. What was your original question? Sorry, Mark. I started rambling on there.
We were talking about your kids and the education system and them interacting with the community. And I was asking you, what experience, generally speaking, here living on this homestead, did they get, do you think, that other kids don't get?
Yeah, well, I think the short answer, I guess, is I think it engenders a sense of resourcefulness that is really lacking in most structured educational opportunities these days. And some of that is because, and maybe most of that is because most of those institutions are under-resourced and are... by default, really focused on this sort of results-based, accountability in terms of testing, standardized test scores that are going to, determine their funding and basically ensure their future, even at this point. So I think, by not subjecting them to that environment, they have a lot more opportunity to explore their own, first of all, their own interests and passions, but also through the context of, you know, the things that need to happen on our homestead, and even in the context of doing chores, you know, at the dairy farm down the road, it really puts them in a position of having to be, you know, resourceful on a day-in, day-out basis in a way that I think is not super common anymore in childhood.
I'm talking with Ben Hewitt. He's the author of The Nourishing Homestead, One Back to the Land Family's Plan for Cultivating Soil, Skills, and Spirit. How do you financially keep the wheels going here?
Yeah, that is an ongoing discussion. actually, I talk in the book very explicitly about finances and about money, because I think it's one of the things that I've seen really sort of lacking in a lot of these kind of books that I'm always really curious about. It's like, how do people make this happen?
Right,
you know?
Right.
And, you know, and in terms of the income that we actually generate and bring in, I mean, you know, writing is the bulk of our income. We do sell some surplus products off the homestead. But, you know, I like to say that we make money by not spending it. So in large part, we are, you know, making money by paying ourselves to do the things that most people pay other people to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because, of course, you have to pay tax, income taxes, you know, a dollar not spent is a dollar, you know,
right.
$1.20 or $1.30 or $1.40, depending on your tax bracket, earned, essentially. So, you know, we really sort of live by the mantra that, you know, we will try to do for ourselves. And you know, we're not dogmatic about that. I mean, I just took my car down to get fixed at our local mechanic's yesterday. You know, and I'm not a great mechanic. I know that there are times when it's better to turn it over to someone with more experience than me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we saw all our own lumber for our building projects. We have a sawmill. We harvest all our own firewood. We raise and process, you know, 90%+ of our food. You know, we don't hire out a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You bought this property in what year?
1997.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the mistakes you did make, just in terms of trying to learn here something.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, let's talk about constructing the house.
Yeah, way too big. Way too big.
All right. You made an expansion on it at one point, right?
Yes. We
right.
did, and you know, looking back, I mean, I don't know, hindsight's always 20/20, I guess, but listen, it is way too big, and we did make a lot of mistakes. One thing, I want to say, we did do one thing right, which is that we didn't go into a lot of debt to make this happen.
Right. Right?
So when I say, you know, when I talk about the mistakes we made, I do want to sort of, you know, talk about those in the context of, you know, the sort of overarching theme of, like, remaining relatively debt-free, which has sort of enabled us to do what we do. Like, if we had taken on a big mortgage, like a lot of people do, if we had hired someone to build our house, and we did hire some people to work with us on and off, but we didn't, you know, just sort of, like, subcontract the whole thing out, you know, it would have been a radical lifestyle changer for us. So,
mm-hmm.
But yes, you know, the house is way bigger than it needs to be. And as anyone who, you know, has lived in any kind of space knows, that it's like, no matter how much space you have, you end up filling it over time.
Uh-huh.
And so we sort of find ourselves at a place in our lives, you know, realizing it. It's interesting, as, you know, the older we get, and maybe, I don't know, I think you're just a little bit older than me, maybe you've experienced this too. It's like, the older you get, the less you realize, you know, or the more you realize how little any of this stuff really matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, and we've been very careful. I mean, we are super careful consumers and conscious consumers, and yet it still creeps up on you.
You mean I can't keep all those childhood trophies that I have?
Right.
Come on, those are really important.
Yes. Well, yes. And
If you have any questions for Ben, you can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Do you miss anything about not living or living a lifestyle differently than what you do? The non-homesteading lifestyle.
Yeah, you know, I honestly will say no. I will say that there is no question that there are trade-offs, right? And when I say I don't miss these things, it's just because that we have, you know, we feel really strongly, our conviction is very strongly that, you know, these trade-offs are worth it to us. And so one of those trade-offs, of course, is that we do not have flexibility to travel on a whim or really almost, I mean, our place is now sort of challenging enough for someone to come in, someone else to come in and manage that it would be very difficult to sort of leave it in anyone else's hands for any period of time. Mm-hmm. You know, we have no backup heat. We have only wood heat. We have cows, pigs, sheep, chickens. The boys have goats. I mean, you know, there's just a lot going. There's a lot of moving pieces and parts. So we have definitely sort of decided that the day-in, day-out rewards of living this life, you know, usurp the opportunities to sort of, like, close the door behind us and, you know, I don't know, go down to the Bahamas or something for a week. And also, you know, the flip, the other thing is like, because we have chosen to live this way, we also couldn't afford to do that. So we don't have the disposable income that would allow us to do that. So I guess, you know, I think for a lot of people, that's just a non-starter. They just, you know, they want that flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we don't have that. But to us, we're okay with that. You know, we're okay with that. But that's definitely, you know, it's definitely something I hear about a lot. And I understand that as being, you know, an impediment to some people's, sort of, you know, homestead aspirations.
How many animals do you have?
We have right now 6 cows, 2 are milkers, the rest are in, you know, varying stages of being raised for beef. We raise pigs year round because we have a constant stream of milk to feed them. We have a very small flock of sheep. I don't even know if it qualifies as a flock. We have about 20 layers. I guess that's it for the. Oh, and we have 2 sons. So that's it for the animals. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many hours do you think you work a day on the homestead?
It's super variable. You know, I mean, this time of year, it's honestly not that much. This is sort of like the lull in homestead labor. So, you know, chores generally don't take more than maybe a half an hour in the morning and a half an hour in the evening. You know, the flip side is in the height of spring when we're doing a lot of planting, you know, we might be working, I might be doing 6 hours a day, and this is super rough on the homestead, and, you know, another 3 or 4 hours at my desk. And, of course, like in the fall when we get into, or during a period of intense, like, you know, during haying, that can be incredibly intense for a very short window, as anyone who's put up hay knows. And we put up square bales, so anyone who's out there who's listening who does hay understands that that's what, its own sort of special challenge. And, you know, and then in the fall or in the harvest season, you know, we do put a lot of effort into processing food. And then a few times a year where we process most of our own meat on the property. So if we're doing pigs, you know, that's a pretty intensive process that can last a couple of days or mm-hmm. even 3 days by the time we're finished.
I love the photo of the hanging pig skin. That was
a really nice touch.
Yeah.
Dude, turn you right over to tofu, huh?
Well, you know, what was interesting is there's this phrase about sausage making and how unpleasant it is to watch. And I actually thought it was sort of interesting how you described it. Can you describe how you actually make sausage?
Yeah, sure. I mean, our process for making sausage changed dramatically a couple of years ago when we actually bought a sort of almost commercial scale grinder. We make a lot of sausage. Like, sausage is a foundational aspect of our diet because it's so versatile. And so it's not uncommon for us to grind almost a whole pig into sausage minus, you know, the bacon and the loin area, which we turn into chops.
But which you say you can make about 120 pounds of sausage?
Yeah, like a good-sized pig. I think actually that's almost exactly what we made out of the last pig. I think it was like 123 pounds or something. So, you know, again, you still have your bacons and you have your, we like to raise decent-sized pigs. They usually dress in the 250 range or maybe a little less, but you got your bacons and you got your chops and a couple loin roasts, and we might save out a ham or half a ham for a gathering. But generally, the rest of it, we just put it right into sausage. And so we grind, and then, you know, we have these big tubs that we put the ground meat in, and then we mix in all these spices. I mean, it's not a super complicated process. It's a great opportunity to use like organ meats that some people don't like to eat otherwise, mm-hmm. but which are of course loaded with vitamins. So we generally put we put a lot of organ meats into our sausage. Although we have recently discovered a really killer liver pate recipe.
Yeah.
We've been making a lot of liver pate. Did you say yuck?
Yeah, no, I said yup. I read
okay.
it. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it sounds like yuck. Sometimes.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, so, and, you know, sausage, so, like, we had sausage this morning. It's not uncommon for us to eat sausage twice a day.
Uh-huh, yeah. That sounds yum.
It's wicked yum.
Let's go to Cabot. This must be one of your neighbors. Paul, any complaints about Ben as a neighbor?
No, I just admire Ben's lifestyle, and I wanted to ditto his approach to, working more on the farm and, like, working less off. I feel like more that you work at your own place, the better you get at it, and the less commuting, looking for work you have to do. So I really admire that about Ben.
That's great. So what do you do out in Cabot?
I have a little horse logging and carriage operations, but I have to go find work in other towns. But when I'm working here on my own place, I like it because I'm not spending money on gas and, travel time. There is a learning curve. You're learning how to sugar and saw wood and everything. It takes time, but once you do it, it's very satisfying, working at home, per se.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thanks for that call. That's Paul Ruta. He's a great horse logger just down the road. And I think one of the things that's so rewarding, I think, about this lifestyle, one of the things that I think that draws so many people to it, is I think a lot of people, and I don't want, obviously I can't speak for everyone. I only speak for the people that I've heard from and from my experience with having conversations with the people. But I think, a lot of people feel like they don't have a whole lot of agency over their lives, and that's especially true if they are at a job that they don't really enjoy very much. I think that's one of the things that's so satisfying about this work is it really does give you the sense that, your life is in your hands and that you can sort of, fashion and create the world as you imagine it. Obviously that's not an absolute. There are many ways in which, we don't have complete autonomy or agency over our lives. But in a lot of ways we do. And I think more so than is common for people who, are working away from home 40, 50 or more hours a week.
What do you do about health insurance?
We are beneficiaries of the Vermont Healthcare Exchange, and we do have health insurance, and it is subsidized through the state. We have gone periods without having health insurance, and the health insurance thing is such a big sort of nut to crack and such a dilemma, and I think it is one aspect that I think it really is a barrier for a lot of people who want to get out of positions that they really don't like, but feel compelled to stay there because of health insurance. And the tragic irony of it is that I think in a lot of times it's the very lifestyle, job and lifestyle that they're maintaining in order to keep their health insurance that is sometimes making them sick.
Yeah. Yuck. Yuck.
So,
yeah.
I have no compunctions, I have to say, about, I believe the healthcare industry in this country is so messed up and so rigged and that I have no compunctions about accepting assistance with those premiums. I hear from people sometimes who, sort of feel kind of outraged that someone would sort of choose a life of thrift and then rely on, sort of the state for that kind of assistance. And I guess I understand that to a certain extent, but I think it misses a much larger point about where we are in terms of our relationship to healthcare and our healthcare industry. I will also say that we almost never use it. I mean, I'm 43, my wife is 47, zero medications. Our children have never so much as had a single course of antibiotics. you know, I'm really glad to have that health care that health insurance as a backup in case I, you know, drop off of my left foot with the chainsaw or whatever. But we generally seek health care outside the mainstream medical industry anyway.
Okay. All right. A couple of email questions here for you. How did he afford to buy and build on his own land?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to talk about that. So we bought this land, and this is sort of where I talked earlier about a little bit about luck. You know, one of those pieces of luck was that we were looking for land in 96 and 97 when land could still be found relatively inexpensively. So we bought this piece of land, 40 acres, for $30,000, and that's money we had saved. I was working part-time as a builder. That makes me sound like I'm more skilled than I was working part-time as a construction laborer and at Onion River Sports in the off-season. And my wife was working at, Penny was working at Kate Farm in East Montpelier. And we had managed to save about $15,000 from those jobs, in part because we were living in a tent on friends' land during the summer and fall months. And so we found this land with that savings, and then also we took out a loan for the rest of it. And then we started originally with a very modest cabin. We borrowed $10,000 from a friend of ours who had some resources, and we built a very modest cabin that we moved into. We paid that off. We paid off the land loan, and then we took out a pretty modest construction loan to put the addition on. That's the short version.
Mm-hmm. Other question was, what are Ben's suggestions for someone who is middle-aged with a family and has a full-time job wanting to do what he's doing to stop, quit their job, and move out of the current house they own to go build and start from scratch like he did? Question mark?
Oh, man. Well, that's a huge question, and it's one that I get fairly frequently, and I guess, you know, without knowing a little bit more
Ben
about this person's circumstances, it's really hard to answer, you know? I would say that, you know, if this is someone who, you know, is in the fairly typical situation of feeling as if they're a little bit trapped by their financial circumstances, the very best thing they can do is to get themselves on, you know, some kind of path that's going to liberate them in terms of debt. Probably the second best thing they can do is to think really creatively about what that might look like. I don't think it always has to look like people owning their own piece of land. You know, I think there are opportunities. We've had people staying here with us for periods of time who have wanted to sort of immerse themselves in this life, at least for a period of time. And we would have even considered something longer term if the right situation arose. So I think there are opportunities, you know, outside the notion that everyone has to own their own 40-acre parcel in their own homestead.
Mm-hmm. So you're not recommending people walk into their boss's office today and just say, I'm done, and leave and just go out and buy some
property. You know, if they have the financial resources to do it and they're called to this, absolutely.
I say do it, don't you, Ben?
I think the worst thing, you know, I just wrote about this yesterday. It's like, if you know in that center of your heart that this is what you want to do, and that's the place you sort of tend to know things, right, before you kind of like intellectually know them, I think.
Uh-huh.
But if you have that feeling, you know, that that's something that you want to do, you know, and you have the wherewithal to do it, you know, don't be afraid of this. I mean, Paul Ruta there was talking about, you know, how, you know, there are skills to be learned. You know, it takes time. And, you know, he's absolutely right. But the flip side is that there's nothing that we do here that takes an exorbitant amount of skill. This is not difficult work. It can be physically difficult, and it can be, you know, sort of mentally taxing in the sense that sometimes it can be a little overwhelming when you have, you know, 50 different things that need to be done at the same time. But from a skills perspective, you know, there is nothing going on here that is, you know, is particularly impressive. And I'm sort of loath to say that because I really want people to buy my book and be impressed by it.
Right.
But, you know, that's just the reality. You know, this is not rocket science.
Uh-huh. But it's not easy either. Come on.
I guess it's not easy, yeah. Right? But what is easy? Is easy, you know, like getting up by an alarm clock and rushing through breakfast so you can get the kids to school so you can get in the car to drive 45 minutes and sit in an office chair for 8 hours at a job you can't stand so that you can get home? You can drive another 45 minutes to get home and rush through dinner or maybe pick up some crappy takeout food on the way home and then sit in front of the TV for 3 hours. Is that easy?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going off. I had too much coffee this morning. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make is you know, I think what we perceive as being easy and convenient in 21st century American culture is often, I think, is leading us down a path toward, and oftentimes, not always, but often, a pretty hollow life.
False promise.
There you go.
False promise. All right, I got to let you run. Thank you, as always.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
I appreciate your time.
All right, take care.
Ben Hewitt is the author of The Nourishing Homestead, One Back to the Land Family's Plan for Cultivating Soil, Skills, and Spirit. You know, why not? We'll take a quick break. We're going to check in next with the auditor, Doug Hoffer, back after this.
802 Honda promised super friendly service with low pricing, and you heard us. Thanks to all of our customers for making 802 Honda the fastest growing Honda dealer in Vermont.
At 802 Honda, we love to listen. Our Lease It Your Way program is designed to customize a lease for both your budget and driving needs.
You can drive away every new Honda with absolutely no money down, or pick your payment, and we will show exactly how much money down you need. The biggest myth about leasing is mileage. We're custom designing leases for higher mileage drivers all the time, often with 20,000 miles or more. Let us custom tailor.